Even if you had a kingdom there 2,000 years ago. I hear versions of that line constantly now, usually from anti-Israel activists in places like Ireland, Canada, Britain and the United States, insisting Jews are not really a people at all, but merely adherents of a religion who arrived from Europe and displaced an indigenous population with no meaningful prior Jewish connection to the land. The argument sounds pseudo-sophisticated only until one pauses long enough to consider what it is really saying. It is saying conquest erases indigeneity. It is saying exile voids peoplehood. It is saying a nation can lose its connection to its homeland through enough centuries of persecution, statelessness, and dispersion. And somehow this principle applies uniquely to Jews. No one says to Greeks, well, maybe Athens mattered 2,500 years ago. No one says to Native Americans that centuries of forcible removal erased their connection to ancestral lands. Only Jews are routinely told that indigeneity comes with a statute of limitations. The problem with this argument is not merely moral. It is historical. The Jews did not disappear from Judea after Rome crushed the Bar Kokhba revolt in 135 CE, a revolt in which Jewish rebels minted coins in Hebrew proclaiming freedom for Zion. Yes, Rome destroyed Jewish sovereignty. Yes, it renamed Judea, Syria Palestina, in part to sever the Jewish connection to the land. Yes, many Jews were killed, enslaved or dispersed throughout the empire. But Jews were never fully expelled from the land of Israel. Jewish communities remained continuously in places like the Galilee, Tiberias, Hebron and elsewhere. Within roughly two centuries of the Bar Kokhba revolt, Jews were again living openly in Jerusalem despite repeated Roman and Byzantine restrictions. Nor did Jews ever stop attempting to restore autonomy or national life there. The Bar Kokhba revolt itself was an attempt to re-establish Jewish sovereignty after Roman occupation. Later came additional Jewish revolts against Byzantine rule, including the Gallus revolt in the 4th century. In the 7th century, Jews allied with the Persians against Byzantium and briefly helped restore Jewish control in Jerusalem before the Byzantines retook the city. That was roughly 500 years after the destruction of the Second Temple, and Jews were still fighting over Jerusalem because they still viewed it as the heart of their national homeland. That matters. It destroys the caricature that Zionism was some random European colonial movement invented in the late 19th century by people with no prior connection to the land. The Jewish connection to the land was continuous and multifaceted, geographic, liturgical, legal, demographic, civilizational, and spanning millennia. For over 2,000 years, Jews in dispersion prayed facing Jerusalem three times a day and prayed for a return to a rebuilt Jerusalem. For roughly 1,500 years, Jews have concluded Passover and Yom Kippur with the words, "Next year in Jerusalem." Hundreds of mitzvah in Jewish law apply only in the land of Israel, shaping agriculture, economic life and religious practice, from the sabbatical year to first fruits and cultivation laws. The Hebrew calendar anchors Jewish holidays to the seasons of the land of Israel, linking sacred time to the land's agricultural cycle, from spring to fall. Hebrew itself, now spoken daily by millions, is indigenous to the land. Contrary to the endlessly repeated myth that Hebrew was dead, Jews never stopped praying, studying, writing legal texts or corresponding in Hebrew. Eliezer ben Yehuda modernized spoken Hebrew. He did not resurrect a vanished language. And throughout the medieval and early modern periods, Jews kept returning. In the 12th century, David El-Roy, a Kurdish Jewish messianic figure from Mesopotamia, attempted to organize a movement aimed at restoring Jewish sovereignty in Jerusalem. In the 13th century, Nachmanides immigrated to Jerusalem after being expelled from Christian Spain and helped rebuild Jewish communal life there. In the 16th century, Safed became one of the great centers of Jewish law and mysticism under figures like Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Arizal. Long before political Zionism, Jews from Yemen, North Africa, Persia and elsewhere continued returning to the land. Yemenite Jews began significant migration waves in the 19th century, decades before the Holocaust or Israeli statehood. By the mid-1800s, Jews had already become the largest population group in Jerusalem. Modern Zionism did not create Jewish attachment to the land of Israel. It translated an ancient and continuous national aspiration into modern political language during an era when numerous peoples were yearning for sovereignty after centuries under imperial rule. And contrary to today's anti-Israel slogans, early Zionism advanced primarily through legal immigration and land purchases under Ottoman and later British rule. Jews bought land, often at inflated prices, frequently from absentee Arab and Turkish landowners. They drained malarial swamps, built farms, and established universities, hospitals, and civic institutions. Then came partition. By the late 1940s, after years of Arab-Jewish violence, much of it incited by Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Nazi collaborating Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and leader of the Arab Higher Committee, the British concluded the mandate had become unmanageable. In 1947, the United Nations proposed partitioning what remained west of the Jordan River into one Jewish state and one Arab state. That detail matters because roughly 78% of the original mandate territory had already been separated earlier by Britain to create Transjordan, today's Jordan. The proposed Jewish state itself was geographically fractured, strategically vulnerable, and included mainly stretches of the arid Negev desert. The Jews accepted partition anyway. The Arab Higher Committee rejected it. Then five Arab armies invaded after Israel declared independence. The resulting war created many Palestinian Arab refugees, a genuine human tragedy. But it also coincided with the destruction of ancient Jewish communities across the Arab world. Within little more than a decade, roughly 900,000 Jews were expelled, dispossessed, or driven from Arab countries stretching from Iraq and Egypt to Yemen, Libya, and Morocco. Communities whose roots in many cases predated the Arab-Islamic conquests themselves. This was not a wartime displacement. Unrelated to any battle or war, it was the near-total eradication of ancient Jewish diasporas across much of the Middle East and North Africa. That part tends to disappear from modern conversations. But a larger point remains unavoidable. Had the Arab world accepted partition in 1947, there would have been both an Arab state and a Jewish state west of the Jordan River nearly eight decades ago. No invasion, no refugee crisis, no generations of bloodshed. What many anti-Zionists object to today is not a particular Israeli policy or border. It is what Haj Amin al-Husseini objected to from Berlin in the 1940s, Jewish sovereignty itself. The idea that Jews, alone among the nations of the world, are not entitled to self-determination in any part of the land where their civilization, language, calendar, faith, and national identity were born. And because the historical case against Jewish indigeneity is so weak, the argument increasingly descends into absurdity, from amateur genetic theories to bizarre claims that today's Palestinian Arabs are the direct and exclusive heirs of the ancient Canaanites. But no Palestinian Arab community today speaks a Canaanite language, practices a Canaanite faith, or follows a Canaanite calendar. Hebrew is the only Canaanite language that has survived into the modern era. The surviving indigenous civilization continuously rooted in Jerusalem, Zion, and the land of Israel for over three millennia is Jewish civilization. That is why Jews are treated so uniquely by anti-Zionists. Because acknowledging Jewish indigeneity does not merely complicate the anti-Zionist narrative. It exposes it. Micah Danzig served in the Israeli army and is a former police officer with the NYPD. He is currently an attorney and is very active with numerous Jewish and pro-Israel organizations, including Stand With Us and the FIDF, and is a national board member of Herut North America.